It is 3 o'clock, and you are listening to WMRW-LP, broadcasting out of Warren, Vermont at 94.5 FM and streaming live at WMRW.org. The following program presents the views of its participants and producers. It does not necessarily represent the views of WMRW or its license holder, RootsWork. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Amy, and I am in the studio today to share with you the latest edition of the 5H show. And the 5H's stand for health, happiness, harmony, humor, and humanity. And my name is Amy Hornblass, and my co-host Jerry Procaccini and I put together this 5H show. And today, I am live in the studio on January 19th, 2025, to bring you some very cutting-edge information here on the front of Health Choice Freedom. I am going to have a live guest on the radio. He's going to be calling in here any moment. And his name is Dennis Steele. And he is a very courageous neighbor of ours here in Vermont. He lives up in the Northeast Kingdom. And I recently read an article about him and about the way that he was standing up to mask mandates during the COVID debacle. And he was arrested, actually, for not wearing a mask at his teenager's basketball game. And there he is calling in. So hold on, let me get him on the air here, folks, and we're going to hear more about it. Hold on one moment, please. Hello? Hello, Dennis?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. You're there. Welcome. Okay. Yes, I was just doing an introduction for folks.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so I was just letting folks know about the article where I read about your courageous act and your court case, which was just dismissed. So I was letting them know that we have some cutting-edge info here. And just about the only place you can read about this court case and Dennis's efforts here and his arrest at all was in the Vermont Daily Chronicle. So if folks want to read the article where I heard about what's been happening with Dennis and got the update, you can go to my website, amyvt.com. And if you go on the 5H show page, you'll see that at the top there, I have upcoming episodes and I've posted a link there under a short description of what we're going to be covering here today. And you can go right to that Vermont Daily Chronicle article by Michael Belowski, where he lays out kind of the recent events and the court case dismissal, which we're going to get all into today. I'm really excited, Dennis. This is so important for folks to know, but I'm going to let our listeners know Dennis sent me some information about his background here. And just so you guys understand who we're talking with, Dennis Steele is a U.S. Army vet with the Uniform Helicopter Crew Chief. He was a crew chief with the 67 Uniform Helicopter. He's also a business owner with 3 retail stores that he's currently running, so we appreciate him taking the time here today. His family goes back to the Abenaki Indians in Vermont. Dennis grew up in Kirby, Vermont, and served in the U.S. Army from 1985 to 89, where he was stationed in Hawaii. And after he left the military, he spent some time as a real estate agent in Hawaii. And then he also spent time as a finance manager at 2 Ford dealerships in California and attended California Poly and Cuesta College, where he earned degrees in math, general science, and a BA in liberal studies with a minor in anthropology. And he has since, lucky for us, moved back to Vermont, where he's been raising his two children, who are now 18 and 20 years old. Ah, so thank you, Dennis. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, well, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Did I get all that right?
You did. Well, the 67 uniform, the military people know that's just the code for the job title, was 67 uniform or 67U. It's basically helicopter crew chief on a Chinook helicopter in Hawaii, which was a lot of fun, flying around the Hawaiian Islands.
Wow, that must have been beautiful.
Oh, it was. It was. Yeah, seeing whales out the door. We used to fly to the Big Island. And yeah, some good times, you know, as a young man, fresh from Vermont, being exposed to the Hawaii culture and all the different cultures that are in Hawaii. It was a great time.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so to have you leave Hawaii, you went to California for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I attended, California Polytechnic Institute. Yeah. It was in San Luis Obispo. It was, you know, we owned a house in Paso Robles, so it made sense. And I was married and I was at older age when I went back to college. And it made sense for me to go there, but, true real passion was I wanted to be a cultural anthropologist, but I had, you know, studied math, or I compromised with math thinking I could become a math teacher because I made some breakthroughs because I struggled with math when in high school, but in college I made breakthroughs and I was, you know, thinking I could maybe teach other students, and it didn't work out that way. I volunteered as a chess instructor at an elementary school, and needless to say, I found it very difficult to deal with the administration. And I was like, I just don't think I could be a teacher. You know, I just, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, went a different direction.
Oh, yeah, and I do love math, too. On my kids' show right before this, I was just doing a shout-out to math.
It's a fascinating topic and just amazing some of the things that I went through with math. And the one example, if anybody does math, you know, the unit circle was, and I describe it as, you know, trigonometry in the unit circle, and then I was ready to drop out. And it's like you walk into a room and there's no lights and you're kind of feeling things and fumbling around, and then all of a sudden you learn about the unit circle, and then it's like somebody turned the lights on and you understand everything. It was just a fascinating time for me, and that's what kind of inspired me to go forward in math.
Well, there still may be a future in that, because the kids do need help in the math department, I think, these days with the new the new math and whatnot that they're being inundated with. The poor kids. I really, that's why I had to have you come on the show, Dennis, is you stood up for the kids, it seems to me.
I did. I also did it to set an example for my son. And during when that happened, you know, the kids, after they stopped the game, the kids, as they started to realize what was going on, I made a comment that these kids shouldn't be wearing the mask running up and down the court. And the kids immediately pulled their masks off in support of me. You know, they knew. The kids are smart. It's sad. You know, it was like the first game that, you know, it was right after they decided to start the sports back up again. And it was a strange moment for me, because I had been through a similar process of when I ran for governor in 2010. I'd been through the process of being arrested and then having the case dropped, and so when I woke up in the morning, it was just a very strange experience. I don't know how to explain it, but it was just like, you know, God works in mysterious ways, and I just felt that he was compelling me to do this, because I'd already been through it and I knew what to expect. And, you know, just from the moment I woke up in the morning, it was just, the thoughts were there. Driving to the game, the thoughts were there. Putting it through all my head, and this, you know, it took a lot of courage. It wasn't easy. I mean, I kept my calm as best I could when the administrator, whoever was screaming at me to put a mask on. And both my wife and I walked in, actually, without masks, but he started screaming at her, she put it on, and I had already made the decision to stay the course. And he told me he was going to, and literally screaming, and then told me to put the mask on. And when I said, you do what you got to do, he said, you got 4 minutes. And then he turned around and started screaming at the officials to stop the game. And it was just a spectacle, something you don't expect to see in the United States. And very, very strange experience. And I stayed the course. I remember my mouth getting really dry and just, it was really difficult. And, I told him he's got to do what he needs to do. And, during that process, the kids, when they pulled their masks off, they yelled at him to go into locker rooms, and they sent him into the locker rooms. And then I had a parent come up to me with a mask on, and he said, listen, I just want to watch my kid play. Can you just leave or put the mask on? I said, listen, the police are going to be here in about 30 minutes. They're going to arrest me, and then the game will continue. Don't worry. You'll get to see your kid play. I'm the one who's not going to see my kid play. And, of course, the police showed up, and they were like, can we talk with you outside? And I was like, no. I said, am I under arrest? Yeah. I said, okay, fine. I stood up, put my hands behind my back. They put the cuffs on me. And walked me out of the game and brought me into the cruiser. And at that point, as soon as they got me in the cruiser, the two police officers took off their masks. And I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. And they didn't wear their mask in the station. And then they booked me, fingerprinted me, and they put me in this little box and held me till the game was over. And then they gave me a ride back over to the parking lot where my wife was and my son were waiting for me. And my son thought it was great. He was just like, Dad, you're awesome. And all the kids were behind you in the locker room. They were saying you were so, so great. And it just, but then, as it started to settle in once I got back, and then the criminal proceedings started, it took 3 years. I mean, it was mental torture and very demoralizing for me. I mean, the last time I was in a courtroom was when I fought a parking ticket in Hawaii and won. And I'd never been through any kind of process like this. And for it to take 3 years for it to come to resolve was just, of course, and then the attorney fees on top of that. And yeah, I'm glad I did it. I think it was important. I don't know if I call it a win, but I don't know if it's a great win because when we went through the process, it was like we got to the, finally we got all the way to the jury selection, and I walked in the room and there was 80 people there out of 30 cases. Mine was the only one that went to where they were going to do a jury selection, and it was 80 people in the room, and I was just like, I looked at my attorney, I was like, this is all for me. I was just like, really? And as we got into it, they asked the jurors the questions, and then the attorney asked some questions, and then people started speaking out from the juror selection, the people that were being considered, that they thought it was ridiculous, that it was a waste of time and money for the state to be prosecuting this. And so it was nice to see that. And then, of course, we went down in the judge chambers, and then they hashed both my attorney and the state's attorney were hashing out who to select and who to remove. And then we didn't have enough, so we had to go back up, again. And bring some new selection jurors, and then ask the questions all over again, then went back down in the chambers, and then finally selected a jury. And at that point, we got the jury selected, and I took my attorney out to lunch, and I was like, wow, this is, at that time we were both like, yeah, we want to go to trial with this. And and then the next day I got a call from my attorney, and they had dismissed it, and in the letter, and this is why I don't consider it, it's a kind of a win, but not a big win. I think a trial would have been a bigger win, even if I had lost the case. But they said other information has come you saw the letter. And, I'm trying to get my attorney. He doesn't think they're going to give us that information. And I just sent him a message saying, hey, can we do a Freedom of Information Act on this? I mean, it would be nice to know what this other information was, but yeah. We don't know.
That came the 10th hour, or whatever you call it. I mean, right at the very last second after going through the...
We called their bluff, I think, basically.
Yeah, and I'm really curious to see if there really was anything or if it was the jury experience or what.
Well, my attorney thinks it was the people who spoke out. I mean, if you think statistically speaking, out of about 20 potential jurors, and the other 60 were sitting on the side, you know, that out of those 20 or whatever it was, I don't know the number, but it's just a group of people there, you know, four or five spoke their mind about how ridiculous they thought it was. So if you statistically take a sample size like that and extrapolate it out, that's a big part of the population that didn't like what was going on.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, if four to five of them were willing to speak up about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was the speaking. It was the speaking and the acting and the standing in truth that it was the very few and the very brave who could withstand all the social pressure through that time period.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm fortunate enough. I have three businesses, so, you know, and I run them from my home with cameras and you know, I can see everything. I call it the bridge. And so I'm able to run my business at home, but that's how I've done all my businesses going way back. You know, so during that time, I was able to get up and you know, the first thing I would do in the morning, because these are my kids, right? And I had to make decisions based on things, you know, I wanted to make sure I was making the right decisions. And so I would research constantly. And anybody that got censored, any doctor that got censored, I found them. I'd search them out and keep listening to them. And one of the biggest, I found the best information was with the Highwire.com, Del Bigtree with the Jackson Report. That was a great source of information, where I, you know, they would list the studies and the things that were going on, and then I could go and look them up, the peer-reviewed studies. And you know, as a math major, you know, when the whole COVID thing started, the numbers weren't adding up. You know, both my ex-wife and I were math majors, so we got on the phone and started talking and started, you know, hashing out things and looking at numbers, and we were like, none of this adds up. It doesn't seem right. You know, so there was an instant red flag right away. And so I just kept digging and digging. And as you know, can see, with your, I have a file on my computer where I would just store everything that I was learning. And, but you know, I didn't make the decision lightly, you know, when I did this and to take a stand and, to not have my kids vaccinated either. That wasn't a light decision. This was a decision based on lots of research and lots of reading and digging up things and then making the final decision to not vaccinate and ourselves as well. And the pressure was overwhelming. I mean, the fear, everything. I mean, I could see how a normal person, who didn't have time to do as much research or maybe didn't have the educational background in math and things like that, you know, the pressure on this was just overwhelming and the fear. But I made those decisions and I'm glad I did. But it was a very trying time for everybody.
Yeah. If we could just sort of, you know, for a moment, let's all kind of go back there as much as we dare, you know, maybe not emotionally, but mentally, you know, back, I'm looking at the letter that you received from St. Johnsbury School. And we'll get into that too. The repercussions of your actions there at the game. So it was in 2021, and the students had been locked down. They had been sent home the year before, not finishing the school year, and just isolated. Then they were made to come back and sit 6 feet apart and come back halftime and wear masks. And then, you know, so the kids were just desperate to get together. And so when they allowed them to come back together and play sports that fall, even outside, they were requiring soccer players to wear masks. There were soccer players wearing gaiters and things outside in many, many schools. And so as, you know, as our listeners to this show tend to be pretty savvy about this, they know that, that is a very dangerous thing. You know, the oxygen exchange is really impeded. And the kids, like you were saying, were pretty savvy. I information requested my supervisory union, and I was able to see emails that were going back and forth to the superintendent about masks. And at one point in my supervisory union, there was an issue where there was was a student on an opposite team that they were supposed to play. This was a basketball team in the union. Mm-hmm. And there was a student on the opposite team who, for medical reasons or whatever, could not wear a mask, had a mask exemption. And you can see through these emails how it was the adults. It was the coach and the superintendent, and the principal, who were like, we can't play them. This is unfair. That's unsafe. And the rules say that when you withdraw for whatever reason, you lose the game. And so they thought that was so unfair. So you could see through these emails, the adults were really pressuring the kids. Finally, it came down to, okay, we're going to have the kids vote on whether they think this is okay, whether we should go ahead and play. And they had all the kids, this is amazing to read in the email, they all put their heads down. They made them close their eyes so that, you know, confidential, so you feel brave, you know, putting your hand up, whatever. And unanimously, the students wanted to play. They didn't care about the mask.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
the whole thing was the adults, the whole thing.
It was, yeah. I mean, my kids, during the whole lockdown time, would come to me and say, Dad, I'm going to go out hang out with the friends. I'm like, fine. But I'm worried. I really don't want to go out and hang with my friends because I don't want to get you guys sick. I'm like, you know, I have a 98% survival rate. If I get COVID, go have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't even a question, you know, it's like,
yeah, if you could follow the numbers and keep your head clear. So
yeah.
Thank you for doing that. And so, what were you actually charged with for not leaving
trespassing.
Trespassing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I did notice you had sent me that St. Jay Academy, it looks like, also put a no trespass order on you.
No, they just sent me a letter that I wasn't allowed to go and see any of my son's games anywhere anymore. So I didn't get to see my son play the entire season.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really harsh. All right, so trespassing is what the state was charging you with, and dragging it out for 3 years. And you were hoping, you said that you were hoping this would go to trial. Why were you hoping that?
Well, I just think it would have brought to light a lot of things that needed to be discussed. And I think it would have exposed the state of just how ridiculous they're being and just how ridiculous the policies were. And they would, you know, they'd have to own it. And it, you know, regardless of whether I won the case or not, I thought it was important. I wanted to go to trial from the very beginning. My attorney filed a dismissal order in the very beginning. And I was like, why did you do that? I'm like, I don't want to do that. And I was like, can you withdraw that? And he's like, he didn't want to do that. And, you know, okay, whatever. I'm just going to listen to you, and I'm going to let God take the path and go. And so I didn't, you know, but I did voice my objection to that, because I was like, you just gave them an out.
Mm-hmm.
And like any smart, intelligent person, in my opinion, at the state would have been like, yeah, let's just get rid of it and move on. And they didn't. And I was just like, whoa. I'm like, okay, that surprised me. You know, I was like, okay, all right, let's go then. And, you know, I was facing, you know, 3 months in prison as well. Now, luckily, my attorney and I used to play chess, so I used a chess analogy. He won a pawn in the very beginning, the first day that we were in front of the judge. And the judge said, no, he won't be facing jail time, because it was a $1,000 fine, and 3 months in prison was the maximum sentence. So he won a pawn by getting the judge to agree that I would just be facing the fine, which then, you know, because I'd already resolved myself to the fact that, yeah, I could spend jail time. I still want to see the trial. And, but when he won that pawn, it made it even easier to go forward, but it didn't, but still the mental aspect of it was difficult, especially 3 years. I mean, it just, yeah, I can't even, you know, it was just mentally draining for me. It still is. I mean, it's nice. It felt like it's over finally, and it was lifted off of me. But still, there's still, you know, issues with it and thoughts and things that, you know, the dismissal wasn't that one sentence with the information, and not them not telling me that. Like, what is it? You know, it just yeah. But anyway, yeah, it has been difficult.
Right. It's like you didn't get the closure, you know, at least one way or another. You would have been in jail and made at least a big wave with that. Right. At least.
Well, I wouldn't like I said, my attorney won that pawn in the beginning. I was only going to face $1,000. Right. Mm-hmm. But I would have had a misdemeanor on my record. right? And I don't have any record at all. So that would have been a misdemeanor on my record as well. And so, you know, that's big to me, you know. But still, I wanted to face it. And luckily, he won that pawn in the very beginning. But I did, like I said, I had already thought about it, and I was ready to push forward regardless. I mean, because I remember in the very beginning, when we first had the court date, it was over the phone. So they were still doing these, you know, web whatever, you call in, and they still weren't meeting at the courthouse. And the judge was like, we couldn't get through. I was like, what's going on? My attorney is like, I don't know. Let me call the courthouse. They called the courthouse, and finally they got the judge on the phone because we somehow couldn't get through on WebEx. She's like, oh, well, I thought this was going to be a diversion case. I'm like, no, not guilty. So, yeah, yeah. So they just didn't expect. I don't think they expected us or me to go through with the whole thing, because they did make one final attempt in the very end. The court went on recess, and the state's attorney took my attorney aside, and I went out to get a drink of water, and then I saw them talking, so I stood there and listened. But she was trying to get him to settle with, like, you know, if he just pleads no contest. And my attorney was like, no, we're not going to do that. And then, of course, then, you know, it proceeded to trial, to jury selection at that point. But they, I don't know. It's just mind-boggling experience to think about where the state was in their thinking process. I don't know if you ever get a chance. Robert Kaplan would be somebody to interview on. This would give you probably more insight. Because I was like a fish out of water with all the proceedings and stuff. And I just couldn't believe what was going on. And, you know, especially when we got to the jury selection, I was like, wow. It's like, you know, if you ever see that show Law and Order, I was like, wow, this is Law and Order. You know, it's like, you know, oh, strange. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm
so. I don't wish anybody to go through that experience. But there was a case, I think it was in Massachusetts, where a dad won his case. He refused to put a mask on his son's baseball game, of all things, outside. He was arrested. And he won that case. So we had that. And then now we have this. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't know how big of a win it is for us, given that it was dismissed.
Right. I mean, I'm sure that's the hardest part, is not having the closure. And I'm sure, like me, I know I've been craving this whole time to just sit at the table and compare notes. Like, let's see here. What have you guys really got for evidence? You know, to have that duke it out. And I'm really grateful you had Robert Kaplan for your lawyer. I've been following his work and listened to his case with the Desautels way back when the UPS store, Michael's UPS store, yeah, was being closed. And I listened to that virtual court case. And it's so hard when you're not even in the room and you're having technical issues. It's so stressful.
Yeah.
But I was actually able to meet with Robert Kaplan about a year and a half ago. I was really fortunate to get some time with him to show him, you know, what evidence I had gathered. And I was just really curious, and my friend was curious too, like, where do we go from here, Robert? We've done this mask forum, we've been fighting the schools, we've been doing it on all levels. Where do we go next? Is there any hope in the courts? And this was a year and a half ago. He just said, no, you know, the courts, there is no hope, you know, because until the court of public opinion shifts in Vermont, we're not going to get the court, you know, the judges to go out on that limb. And so I want to thank you, Dennis. That's a big reason why I wanted to bring you on here, because this, I think, and from what Robert was explaining, you know, he believes too that this is the way to do it.
Yeah. It is, but it's hard. Anybody who wants to do it this way, just know it's not easy. It's the mental battle is the biggest, you know, the demoralization effect. So if you plan to do this, just know. It would be nice if people would just, because I did ask the police officers once I got in the car, I said, what if the audience would have mostly taken off their masks? He said, then we wouldn't have been able to do anything. So it really would have been better if it started there, rather than letting one person have to take it to court and put it all on their shoulders.
That's what I was hoping for, too, back then. If people had not complied, we would not be here and with any of this, the whole thing.
Yeah. We need people to stand up. You know, if one person stands up and you believe the same thing, then damn it, stand up. Take the mask off and don't do it. You know, just and just you know, that's where we need to be. That makes it easier for everyone, you know, and don't put this on one person. You know, one person has to push forward. In this case, I did. I hope it made a difference. I hope it makes a difference in the future. I don't know how much of a difference it will make, but God only knows.
Right. Well, and so that brings me to another point, which is the media censorship around this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, do you want to explain what you've... it's by sheer luck I even ever heard about your case, really.
There was no police log. I couldn't find anything online. Normally, you can look at the police logs, right, and see something, right? No police log. Nothing. Finally, I just reached out to Guy Page because I remembered him from the campaign when I ran for governor. And I just said, you know, I sent an email off to him, like, here. You know, and luckily he picked it up and ran with it. At least we had that. You know, it's nice to know we still have some independent media in Vermont. I definitely thank him for running that story. You know, that's the only thing we had, which allowed me to put up a post on Facebook and people could read it. And some people responded. So some people knew about it. But yeah, it was totally like just nothing, even now. You know, I think that they realized that it gotten bigger. I mean, the media wouldn't be able to ignore it when we hit the trial, especially after the 80 jurors showed up and that started people talking about the whole thing. And if it would have gone to trial, they couldn't have ignored it. And that's, you know, why when my attorney called me, he says, I got some good news and I got some bad news. You know, and good news is it was dismissed. The bad news is we don't get the trial. He said, I was really looking forward to going to trial. I was like, me too. You know, and like I said, even if I didn't win, it was still a win to get to trial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if I didn't win the case, it was still a win for everyone because it's going to have to bring everything up in the talk and everything again, which is what we need to do. And I just find it strange, you know, I mean, if the state would just say, yeah, we were wrong, we're sorry, you know, and we won't do that again, they won't. I don't understand it. They're just people like us. And I don't sometimes get it why they just can't, you know, be humble.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah.
That we're equals. You know, it's basically, do we believe the Declaration of Independence or not? Are we all created equal? With an equal say.
Yeah. 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 I hope it helps. You know, like I said, you seem to think it's a bigger win. So I'm glad. You've been kind of on the forefront, it seems like, with some of the issues. And I hope it does help. I hope it does set a precedent. I did send a letter off to the St. Johnsbury Academy, you know, not being mean, but just, you know, saying, listen, I know it was trying times for everyone, but please, you know, don't ever do this to anybody again. And just, you know, never heard back. Nothing. Not even a peep, you know, and just, yeah, it's still sad that it still doesn't feel like we're out of this yet. It still feels like, you know, the next time this happens, people need to stand up and we can't let it happen again.
Yeah, and we do sort of need to have it out. You know, we need to put the evidence on the table because I'm super confident that if all we could, once we put that evidence out there, it's a pretty simple thing if people can think clearly about it. What were some of the tactics that you and Kaplan were considering if it did go to trial?
Basically, just for the state to, well, at first, when they first hit us, the state's attorney, they were talking about they're going to bring a mask expert in and the Department of Health expert. And so, you know, I was like, are we okay? So we're going to trying to figure it out. And then as I talked to him, I was like, you know what, Robert, don't do anything. Right. I was like, there's no sense in like doing that. Just let the state prove their case. And it was like, you know, and I don't want to get into where, you know, because it already cost me $5,000. Right. And I'm like, how much more is this going to cost me? Right. I'm like, you know, he's telling me in trial, you know, so much. And I'm like, you know, all we want to do is let them prove their case against me. If I lose, it's okay. I'm like, I'm okay. We won by getting to trial. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know, don't try to get up all crazy in this. It's like, it's not worth it. And that stance helped us because when we were in the the judge's chambers, he made a point. He was like, I just want you guys to know that we're going to base this on, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't know what he said, and everything was confusing that day. He's like, basically, we're judging this off the law. It's like, you know, there's no other, like, discussions. It's just based on what the law is of trespassing, right? And my attorney was just like, we're not bringing any expert witnesses or anything like that. And the judge looked confused. And, the whole thing for them, I think when we took that stance is no, he just basically said the state needs to prove that he's guilty. That's all I got to do. So that's it. And it just, you could tell that they were a little bit frustrated by that. And it's like, hey, just prove your case. That's all we want to do. We're not going to go crazy. We're not going to do anything. Just prove your case. And that's all we had to do, in my opinion, was get it to the jury, you know, jury trial, and let it all come out. Let them, because it's on them, it's their burden to prove me guilty, right? Mm-hmm. So they were bringing in the Department of Health and mask experts and calling me a conspiracy theorist and just like, we don't need to do that. Let them, you know, react to us, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that's what we took. And I just remember having the discussion the court proceeding before we went to the court proceeding where there's a jury selection. And my attorney was just like, so how you doing? And I was like, man, I just, you know, it's hard. And I said, well, what do they want? And he's like, well, they want you to bend the knee. And I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. And I explained to him about my son. My son, I felt, my daughter is attending Liberty University. I told her, I was like, when you're out there, I don't know if you want to live in Vermont. If you do, fine. But when you're out there, see if you can settle in a red state. And my son's probably going to stay here. And I told the attorney, I was like, listen, you know, if he has kids here, I don't want this kind of thing to ever happen to him or my grandchildren. And when I said that, he looked at me and he said, all right, I'll do it. And, you know, like he committed it. He said, I won't take any extra money. I'm like, all right, man, let's go. And I said, you know, and it was, you know, it was such a like relief to me because I was already, how am I going to come up with another $7,000, you know? And it's like, ugh. And, you know, and when he said that, it just was like, all right, cool. You know, let's go. Let's roll. And it was great. And then he was engaged. And that's when he really, his questions to the jury were just fascinating, just amazing to watch him go. You know, it's kind of like when you're seeing a chessboard and then you think you're good at chess and then a master comes in, right? It's just going, whoa, you know. And when he got up in front of that jury, that's when he shined. And yeah, great, great attorney, great attorney.
Wow. Yeah. Because in the article that Michael wrote, you described it that the masking critics on the jury were saying, you know, it was just a tool of government control, you know, and things like that. And I just think that is what was so, that's one of the amazing parts of the story is just how the people rose up, you know, the people spoke the truth. They had your back at the end of the day. I mean, I hope you feel that.
I do. I wish it would have been, we could have, you know, gotten it to the point of a trial. You know, I think then, we would have done a lot more damage to the state in this sense, because now they realize, which is where I was at in the beginning of the trial, where I thought when he put that dismissal, I was like, oh, you just gave him a carrot. Like, no, you know, mm-hmm. And they're going to take it like quick. Right. And they didn't. And then, but I think as they got deeper in, they realized, oh, do we really want to go down this road and open up a can of worms? You know? And it's like, yeah, they kind of got, I think in my opinion, they smartened up. Once we hit the jury selection.
I mean, this is just such an amazing story. There are so many aspects to it. And that the local paper, okay, the Caledonian Record up there in St. Johnsbury, which is your town.
Yeah.
has not covered a bit of this as far as I know.
No. I don't know what's up with that Caledonian Record. I've always had a problem with it. I don't get it. I don't get any of this. Maybe they're just trying to survive, you know, so they're doing what they have to do and taking what money they can get from whatever political influence that they're under. It's unfortunate. It used to be a really fantastic newspaper, and now it just seems to be compromised, in my opinion.
Yeah, because I think this would sell papers. I mean, this is the kind of story, you know. And that's why we're doing our best here on the radio, the 5-H show. We try to get the word out. I would love to get a recording of, like you said, Kaplan in action with those jurors.
Yeah, that would have been, you know, I didn't know if I probably couldn't record it myself, but I just didn't know what to expect, right? I could have had my wife come and just record it with a phone. I don't know if they would have allowed that in the courtroom. I don't know. But I just, when I walked into that room and I was just, it was packed. I mean, it was just like, I just couldn't believe it was all for my case. Right?
Is that normal for them to call that many potential jurors?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that's just a normal thing. But mine, out of 30 cases that day, 30 of them plea dealed, and mine was the only one. There was no plea deal, and I refused the plea deal that they tried to give to my attorney at the last minute, you know, to plead no contest. And then we went to the jury selection process. I think that's basically, if poker term, we called their bluff. And I think that's what needed to be done. But I would have loved to have seen it gone to trial.
Yeah, and it sounds like your strategy was right. Kind of let them try to defend their actions.
Yeah.
However,
just make your case. Right?
So if it was trespassing, so what was the argument? I mean, is trespassing just a simple thing on school property? Like they can just remove anybody they want? Or were there other rules they were bumping into?
No, it was just trespass. So they asked me to leave if I wouldn't. I had to leave if I wouldn't put a mask on, and I refused.
Mm-hmm.
So they trespassed me. So that was it. That was all there was. And, you know, I don't know all the legalities of that because we never really got to that point to where we could argue it. But the state came after us like they were going to, you know, like have mass, you know, health experts about the mask. It sounded like they were gearing up to defend the mask, their decision to do the mask when, you know, and that's where we wanted them to be. It's like, go ahead. Yeah. Bring in all your witnesses. You know, we're just not, you know, we're not going to bring in anybody. I'm just going to let you make your case. You know, and all we want is it to be heard by the jury, and we want it out there so people discuss it. That's it. That's the goal. And if I have to pay $1,000 fine, okay, that's fine and a misdemeanor. You know what? The educational experience that I got from this, when it really started, the jury process, that's when I saw the value in it. I was like, oh, wow, this is definitely worth $1,000 fine. I'm going to learn so much on this one. And to go to trial with this, it'll make me stronger if I ever decide to do something like this again. I was like, yeah, it's only $1,000 now, right? You know, I've been through the worst part, right? The mental anguish for 3 years of dealing with it and not knowing what to expect. And this is the easy part, you know? Yeah, it was fun part, the easy part, the reward.
Yes.
But I never got it. It was like I just didn't quite get my full reward, you know, of getting it to trial.
Not yet, but I have a feeling it's still coming. I do. I have lots of ideas. I mean, we can get the transcript at least, you know, if not the recording, and we can bring this to the AOE and all kinds of places because folks listening out there, this is not just a breaking story about Dennis's case and its recent dismissal and the jury revolted. I love that. And he's following God and God's guidance, and he's learning and having fun and finding the investment is worth it, which is all great news. But also, you and I have been simultaneously sort of trying to crack this funding nut, haven't we? And you've done a lot of really hard work. Do you want to explain some of this to folks out there?
Well, I think you probably know as much as I do, but I mean, I can't remember. Oh, I remember I was watching, I believe it was the Steve Bannon, and I'm not sure, Steve Bannon or the Del Bigtree show, when they brought on, I sent you her name, a priest.
AJ Priest, I think.
Or? AJ Priest, onto the show, and she was talking about this ESSER funds, and I'm like, what is this? And all this money that the state's got to keep the kids masks and to do all these procedures for the CDC. And I was like, what? So I started digging, and she actually, I don't know if you ever got in touch with her or not, but I don't know if she's still actively doing that. She was trying to create a group in Vermont to bring it all about, but, you know, time has gone by, so I don't know how far she pushed. But yeah, I mean, indeed, the Vermont Department of Education got $285 million.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the receipts that I sent you, right?
To
show that the money was released to them. And part of the stipulation was, like they had to follow the CDC regulations, CDC regulations stating that the kids had to remain masked to a certain date or something like that. Now, I don't have, I try to dig all that information up. I was a little bit more in tune with it back then. And then digging it all back up and trying to figure it out. And, so there's, but you had told me that they called you a conspiracy theorist for bringing that up. I'm like, right?
Yeah.
You confronted somebody or from the state?
Well, our friends, the Caledonian Record, did cover. One day, a group of us went to the supervisory union school board meeting a few years ago to argue about the masks. And there were parents, and they had horrible descriptions of what their kids are going through, crying every day, going to school, just language difficulties, skin difficulties. I mean, just all breathing difficulty. And we were just begging the school board, please, can we reconsider this mask issue? And at one point, and I didn't realize the newspaper was on the call. So the whole time the paper, the journalist was taking notes and writing up an article about what we were doing. And it was not very favorable to my side. And this was the worst part, was when at one point, one of the parents on the call or something said something like, and isn't this tied to funding? Aren't you guys getting funding? And all I said, and I tried to be super respectful because I knew I was out of order, but I tried to be respectful, but I had to say, I said, ESSER funding. It's the ESSER funding. That's all I said.
Yeah.
And the superintendent, you're out of order, Amy, and da da da. And that's what put in the paper, was that I was like this unruly, and and the superintendent denied it. He said, you're absolutely wrong, basically. I'm paraphrasing.
Wow.
And he denied it. He continued. I tried to trap him, get him on that for the next 2 years that I kept showing up to meetings, and he would never admit it, neither would the AOE. The AOE board won't even discuss it with me. They'll let me come in under public comment. That's all I've ever gotten was public comment.
I mean, I sent you that letter, right? You have that, right? I mean, will that help, what I sent you?
Yeah,
did it help?
Everything you sent me, yeah, definitely. And also, what I was referring to was the state plan that you referenced right away. And in the state plan, it spells it right out, that according to the federal government, schools have to adhere to CDC guidance in order to receive the funding en masse. I mean, it's right there. So we've bundled this all up and we've sent it to our journalist friend. And we're hoping, folks listening out there, that there will be a follow-up article because, we need answers on this. And funding seems to be a really good way to get people interested.
Well, thank you for doing that, because it needs to be brought out and people need to know that there was, money involved in this in their decision to keep the kids masked in the schools.
And the saddest part is that funding, if you really look at what we got it for, I mean, it was for tracking COVID cases and testing the students and making up for all the educational harms that were being done by the lockdown and the measures. It was just unnecessary. And now the big funding crisis we're in now, some of it has to do with we're continuing to pay those positions, even though the ESSER funding has gone away. So it just moved these further, bureaucracy into our school systems that we're now funding to track the kids and their vaccination status and everything else.
Yeah.
Do we even want that money? I think we need to think about it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you're leading the charge on that. I hope you connect with AJ Priest. I don't know if she's still active, but she was, I don't know what, that might be a good person to get in contact with.
Yeah, thank you. I wrote that down. I will. I didn't realize.
Yeah.
That's what gives me so much hope, Dennis, is, every time I turn around, every time I think I'm going to give up hope, I learn about something, like you and what you've been doing, or this AJ and what she's been doing. I mean, I had no idea, and I've been doing this for the past 5 years here in Vermont, and Vermont's a small place. I mean, usually you've met everybody by then, but there are so many of us, and like little muscle fibers, we're all doing our little tug, in whatever way God is telling us to do it. Follow your passion.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have to follow through, because if we don't, it could happen again, and because they've done it before. So if we just need to close the deal, we need to make sure we close the deal. to use a sales terminology. We need to get through the closing. And if we just let this go, you know, oh, it's over, and I don't know. No, we can't. We have to push forward. We have to really push and keep going, and to make sure that we solidify that they can't do this again to us, and that we won't let it happen again.
Right. Well, along that note, I can finally formally let people know out there that we do have legislation this year being proposed in the State House to the education committees to prohibit mask requirements in educational settings across Vermont.
Nice.
Yes. And it's yes, it's at the Legislative Council right now, so we don't have the final language and we don't have the bill number yet. But as soon as that comes out, folks can go to amyvt.com, where I have all the updates. I have an update there now, so you can see kind of the draft language and what we're working on. But Dennis, this your case and the fact that you stood up and the results that you had are going to be so helpful. I mean, this is gold to us. This is really,
oh, wow,
really helpful.
That makes me feel good. I thank you so much for saying that.
And perfect timing. I mean, divine timing. It dragged out for 3 years because it had to, right? It had to come to this moment where the jurors were ready to speak up, where this legislation is in action, right? Where the public opinion is shifting and things are shifting at the State House too. So
that's good to hear.
Yeah.
That's very good news. Yeah, it is kind of strange, you know, when you say God works in mysterious ways, and Newport has one of the biggest backlogs in the state of Vermont of cases, believe it or not.
Wow.
So that's why it took so long for it to come up. So, you know, I mean, some things are, you know, strange in the way that they work out.
Yeah, and that was largely due to the COVID lockdowns, right? I mean, it was bad to begin with, and then it got worse.
Newport is notorious, according to my attorney, for having a backlog of cases. They never dismiss anything. They go to trial with everything.
Wow.
Or they go the process with everything. They very seldom will dismiss cases. So he says they're just notorious for it. That's what they do. So there was this, you know, anything you get into the court cases in Newport is going to take a long time. So if you know, and that's why I say God works in mysterious ways, right? Mm-hmm. It was just enough time for people to digest it and to be over the long enough for it to come back up when people have had time to think about it and digest the whole thing. And, you know, it's fortunate, I think, that it happened in the Newport court system.
Right. That first basketball game coming back out of lockdown, right?
Yeah.
Was it in Newport?
It was in Newport.
Wow. Yeah. In Newport. And so who was it who was yelling at you and trying to kick? Was it the principal?
I don't know. To this day, I don't know who he is. I don't know who he was. I don't know. You know, I don't know if he was the administrative school there or principal or whatever. I don't know who it was.
Wow. COVID brought out the hero in a lot of people, but it also brought out the tyrant in a few folks.
It did. It really did. Yeah, it was very tyrannical the way he acted.
I would hope that with time... with time that he can kind of reflect on that.
I hope so, because it really, you know, shouldn't happen that way. Not in the United States of America, especially not in Vermont, you know.
Right.
I mean, you know, just not here. That stuff shouldn't be happening in a small state where you know everybody, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Where you know. I think it's like 3 degrees of separation in Vermont versus 6. You know?
Yeah. Like... Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, wow. And if I can just ask you, I've been curious. So you ran for governor in 2010?
2010. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was that about?
Well, okay. Well, I mean, if you really want to, that can of worms. Yeah, you can. The cool thing about Vermont is that we're small, right? And so it only took 500 signatures to run for governor. Right? I did that on a weekend during the Maple Festival in St. Johnsbury. You know, I come from former sales. It's easy for me to talk to people and ask them for something, you know? And, so I got 500 signatures, didn't take me long, got on the ballot. And I couldn't get into the debates. You know, it was like they wouldn't let me in. So I kept showing up. You know, they had their Democrats had their calendars on the wall. Doobie wasn't showing up to any of them. There was always an empty chair. And I was like, I'll just take that chair, right? They're like, well, we invited Doobie, but he didn't show up. But I'm here. I'm running. No, you can't be in the debate. And I would show up at all the debates. And finally, you know, there was one that was being broadcast on the public television. They wouldn't let me in. You had to have a ticket to get in. So I had Radio Free Vermont at the time where we'd play local Vermont music and stuff. So I got in that way. I called and they let me in. So I had a little booth set up in the back, and then I just went down and interrupted the debate and asked my question that I always ask.
What's your question?
It was about the military defense budget and how we could utilize that money in Vermont. It was a long time ago. You know, it was a while ago. And I would ask the same question every time about how, you know, using how much money our share of the military budget is, and like, couldn't that be used in Vermont to help the people? And, you know, they just, yeah. But they did the same tactic there. You know, when I asked the question, it'll come to me eventually what the question was, but I, for some reason, can't quite grab it right now out of my cobwebs in my brain. They did the same tactic. They just came up and arrested me, or I put my arms up. I'm like, I'm under arrest. And the police didn't know what to do then. And they looked at the district attorney, and they're like, a disorderly conduct. And so they're like, okay, all right. So as soon as they said that, you know, I went peacefully away into the cruiser, back down to the station, same thing, fingerprint, photograph. And then they released me when the debate was over and brought me back over to get my stuff and leave and gather all my radio equipment, everything, and leave. And then I went through the process. That was a very, like, that was as a time for me when I woke up and realized that we didn't live in a free country, because that was very difficult for me. I remember that, and just how sick I felt that in Vermont that things had changed so much, because, you know, I'm like the Norman Rockwell photo. That's what I felt like I was doing, you know, the guy standing up, voicing his opinion and what he wanted to do. But, you know, Vermont's unique, you know, with it only takes 500 signatures to run for governor, 150 to run for the Senate in Vermont, and 50 to run for the House seat in Vermont. We could change things very drastically if we wanted to. It's just, you know, the people need to be able to do it. But that's one of the things I love about Vermont. It's politically speaking, we can do a lot here. For any type of movement that wants to come in. But the whole process is just, you know, like, you know, they should have been very inviting to me. Like, yeah, let's hear your opinions, right? You're on the ballot, right? You're running for governor. Come on up, right? That wasn't the way it was, right? It was just, you know, the Democrats didn't want anybody else up there. And, of course, the Republican Party, no support whatsoever. In my opinion, like, they're just controlled opposition. But it is nice to see, you know, and I don't mean to get political or anything, but, you know, obviously I am, you know, on the libertarian side, Trump side, obviously. I don't know if you can tell that, but I don't mean to alienate anybody from that. But, you know, Vermont, you know, I got to be careful here. It's a taboo subject to be a Trumper in Vermont. But, you know, I when I ran for governor, I was with the Vermont Independence Movement. You know, that's the movement to secede Vermont from the United States. And it was because of all the issues that are seen that the Trump or campaign and all of the stuff they were talking about, the deep state, it was because of those issues, because we felt that the system was broken and there was no way we could fix it. So the only way to fix it is just for Vermont to become a country again, like it was from 1779. And that right there is, you know, like, important, because, I mean, we're small enough that we could just leave all the corruption behind. And
wow, Dennis.
I mean, we're getting deep down the rabbit hole now.
Yes, and we just have about 30 seconds left, but
yeah.
I love that final statement, right, that we should be able to do it here in Vermont. And I'm just so grateful to you for having the courage to get involved, to put your money and your time and your courage behind what you believe in. You're a great role model, and it was my honor to share your story with the listeners. Appreciate Please it. Come back anytime.
Okay. I thank you very much for having me, Amy.
Yeah, so we had Dennis Steele. He's been in the military. He served in the military. He has a degree in math and science, a business owner. He has a lot of experience, and he recently had a case dismissed. And you can read all about it in the Vermont Daily Chronicle article, and you can also find this recording at amyvt.com. Thank you, Dennis. Have a great afternoon.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Take care, folks. Thanks for joining us.